Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, brought to you today by ZipRecruiter.com. Our listeners can go post a job at ZipRecruiter.com for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. More on that a little bit later in the podcast. Jim Garrity of National Review is here. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, and we start with the good. And Jim, one of the frustrating things, especially early on in the 2016 cycle, was how many people who we thought were pretty consistent conservatives flocked to Donald Trump. I don't know if it was because he was leading in the polls from a pretty early stage or thought he brought a celebrity status that they wanted to somehow get associated with. But among those who are most frustrating for a lot of us is the evangelical community, especially those who are on board early. And nobody typifies that better than Jerry Falwell Jr. Jerry Falwell Jr. was recently on CNN. If you don't know, he's the president of Liberty University, which was founded by his father back in the early 70s. Once the Trump tape came out from Access Hollywood, Falwell said, obviously, that he didn't like the tape, but he was still going to vote for Trump. Now, of course, there are allegations that the New York Times is reporting from specific women who say Trump assaulted them, and he is still standing by Donald Trump. Here he is with Aaron Burnett on CNN.
If what they say is true, does Jerry Falwell Jr. vote for Donald Trump?
I'm going to vote for Donald Trump because I believe he's the best qualified to be president of the United States. And I'm not going to say anything to besmirch the character of any of these women. It's the heat of an election. It's 4 weeks away from Election Day, and it's everybody's in a frenzy, and so we have to keep that in mind.
Well, as we'll point out in a moment, Trump has problems throughout Virginia, but on the campus of Liberty University, it's not just Trump who has a problem, it's Falwell himself. There is now a student group calling itself Liberty United Against Trump, and they've released a statement that reads in part, "In the months since Jerry Falwell Jr. endorsed him, Donald Trump has been inexorably associated with Liberty University. We are Liberty students who are disappointed with President Falwell's endorsement and are tired of being associated with one of the worst presidential candidates in American history. Donald Trump does not represent our values, and we want nothing to do with him. A majority of Liberty students, faculty, and staff feel as we do. Donald Trump received a pitiful 90 votes from Liberty students in Virginia's primary election, a colossal rejection of his campaign. Nevertheless, President Falwell eagerly uses his national platform to advocate for Donald Trump. While he occasionally clarifies that supporting Trump is not the official position of Liberty University, he knows it is his title of president of the largest Christian university in the world that gives him political credentials. Associating any politician with Christianity is damaging to the gospel of Jesus Christ, but Donald Trump is not just any politician. He has made his name by maligning others and bragging about his sins. Not only is Donald Trump a bad candidate for president, he is actively promoting the very things that we as Christians ought to oppose." And then towards the end it says, "We Liberty students are often told to support Donald Trump because the other leading candidate is a bad option. Perhaps this is true, but the only candidate who is directly associated with Liberty University is Donald Trump. Because our president has led the world to believe that Liberty University supports Donald Trump, we students must take it upon ourselves to make clear that Donald Trump is absolutely opposed to what we believe and does not have our support." So, Jim, this is refreshing news. It's good to know that it comes at a school where this type of dissent is hopefully okay. But it's a good rebuke, not only for Falwell, but a lot of people making moral equivocation here, which is really disheartening.
Yeah, I think we've really reached a point where if you're voting for Donald Trump and you really are of the mindset that nothing can come out between now and November 8th, that you will stand by this man no matter what he's accused of, no matter what videotape comes forward, no matter what audio tape comes forward, you are voting for him and nothing can dislodge you. That's your right to have that position, and I think you should be honest with people about it. And ultimately to say, you know, later on in that interview, he basically kind of implied that, well, look, even if he's guilty, you know, in that question, if he was guilty of this, are you going to stand by him? And the answer that he gives to CNN and Aaron Burnett is basically, yeah. So I remember, Greg, back in 1998, we were really angry at Democrats. We were really angry at feminists for what we saw as their giant hypocrisy. That ultimately they were very upset about sexual harassment. They were very upset about allegations of sexual abuse. They were very upset about powerful men taking advantage of women who were working for them until Bill Clinton did it, and then they were perfectly fine with it. And I thought we had a really good argument there. I thought there was a really legitimate case to be made that, no, you can't be opposed to this only when somebody of the opposite party or somebody you don't like does it, right? That this is that right and wrong doesn't matter based on your partisan affiliation. If it's wrong behavior, then it's wrong behavior no matter who's doing it. And you don't make excuses for somebody just because he's on your side. And you would have thought that of all the people in the political realm, that Christians, particularly those who are most open about their faith, those who are loudest about their faith, those who have the most pride in their faith, would be the ones who would toe the line and say, look, I'm not going to defend something that I think is indefensible. And yet here we are. And over the last, 24, basically going back to the weekend, Greg, we have seen Republican after Republican, conservative after conservative, Christian after Christian say, give off one variation of the other of, oh, it's not that bad, it's just words. Now, on the audio tape. Now, I think it gets a little more complicated, Greg, when you say, oh, he said he could do whatever he wanted with that woman. And he said he could grab them by the you-know-what, but he was just joking. He didn't actually mean it. He was saying it. He was saying he could do this, but deep down he knew he really couldn't because he's just not that kind of a person. I think it gets complicated when you have three or four women come forward and say, no, actually, that's what he did to me. He groped me. So now we have him, what sounds to a lot of ears like a confession. And we have a lot of women coming forward with the accusation. And, the expectation is we're all going to say, no, 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 this can't possibly be true. Donald Trump would never do something like this, which I can't believe anybody would necessarily believe that. And I realize this is we're getting deep into the weeds of what is allegedly our good martini. But I make an observation about the go back 4 years, Greg. Herman Cain running for president. Woman comes forward, claims she had an affair with him and that he had sexually harassed her. And there was a split in the conservative movement. People noticed that the older members of the conservative movement lined up behind Cain, said these could not possibly be true. They believed him. They trusted him. She had to be a liar. And they noticed that the younger conservatives were not so eager to rush forward and say, oh, this woman must be offering a pack of lies. Oh, she once lived in the same building as David Axelrod. Oh, she's represented by Gloria Allred. All these reasons say we shouldn't trust her. Now, Greg, I don't know if we ever sorted out with 100% certainty whether Herman Cain ever did anything inappropriate with that woman. But you know what we did figure out, Greg? Herman Cain said in an interview that, yes, in fact, he did give her a loan of some amount of money. He was asked, did you tell your wife about your loan of this money to this woman? He said, no. Then he was asked, how much was this loan for? How much, what amount of money are we talking about? And he refused to say. Now, if it had been 20 bucks, hey, Greg, you need me to loan you 20 bucks? No problem. I don't need to check with Mrs. Campaign Spot, right? If it's small, well, it's a big amount and you don't tell your wife about it, then something unusual is going on. And I think that was a circumstance in which, even if we don't know that, we developed a good reason to be at least a little bit wary of the excuses we were hearing from Herman Cain. So it's been thoroughly depressing, and somehow I'm not surprised to see younger conservatives, younger Christians looking at this and saying, no, we're not going to make this compromise in the name of politics. We're not going to accept this as the price of doing business. We're not going to say, look, this is a necessary evil for the sake of winning. We're not going to avert our eyes. This is unacceptable no matter who's doing it, and we're going to stand forthrightly against it. And I'm sure there are a lot of people who can be really angry at those students. But you know what? They have functioning consciences, and they're not going to be forced into defending the indefensible. So anyway, I'll get down from my soapbox now.
Jim, as you and I have said many times, there are two major dumpster fire candidates in this race. The motivation to defeat Hillary Clinton is certainly understandable. She would be a terrible, terrible president, wrong on all the issues, corrupt as can be, and inept at her job. But for people like Falwell, people in other positions like his, to risk their reputations and perhaps destroy them for the sake of Donald Trump, and not only their own reputations, but more importantly, the cause and the faith that they claim to stand for, are damaged as well. So very interesting that the Liberty University students decided to take this step. All right, on to Trump's bigger problem in Virginia, perhaps. This is from Hot Air, but really courtesy of NBC News. The Trump campaign is withdrawing from Virginia and refocusing their efforts on four key states, Ohio, Florida, Pennsylvania, and North Carolina. The quote from NBC, the decision comes from Trump's headquarters in New York and was announced on a conference call late Wednesday that left some Republican Party operatives in the state blindsided. Two staffers directly involved in the GOP's efforts in Virginia confirmed the decision. The move to pull out of Virginia shows Trump is essentially running a four-state campaign. Jim, you and I have talked a lot about fool's gold in Pennsylvania over the last few cycles. There's a new poll even showing Trump, who had been doing pretty well in Ohio, now down 9 points, I believe. So if this is the way the momentum is headed right now, it's not only clear that Trump is in big, big trouble, but people who have recently defended him and even people who have distanced themselves down ballot have reason to worry.
All week long, Greg, we have had multifaceted martinis. And so technically this is our bad martini, but I almost want to give the Trump campaign credit for seeing the handwriting on the wall and prioritizing. A couple of weeks ago, I'd said, look, Virginia was not looking very good. And that those four states that you described, Ohio, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and Florida, are ultimately what the election is going to come down to. Everything else after that is a luxury. I think there's logic to this move. And so as much as it must be deeply frustrating for the Trump camp, better to do what you need to do to win, to reach 270 electoral votes, than to waste time and money and resources in a state that deep down you're not going to win. I understand they were disputing this report, saying that, no, we're just moving some resources to North Carolina. We're not totally giving up on the state. Look, Donald Trump has not led a head-to-head poll against Hillary Clinton in Virginia ever, right? The closest he came was an Emerson poll back at the end of August, early September, where Clinton was up by one. Last few, Roanoke has her up by 9. Christopher Newport University has her up by 7. CBS News has her up by 8. Are you starting to see a pretty consistent pattern here? Quinnipiac has her up 6, but basically there's not been any signs of good movement in this state. It's unwinnable. I also point out, I've been kind of fascinated to watch the arguments about this and people giving my colleague Jonah Goldberg grief for not voting for Trump. And he's quick to point out, look, I live in the District of Columbia. Donald Trump was, no Republican will ever win the District of Columbia. It's, it's like 70, 80, 90% Democrat. There is no chance of a Republican ever winning there. So don't tell me I'm throwing away my vote or I'm costing Trump the election. Greg, I don't know about you. Virginia doesn't look that far in the sense that it's just not, at this point, not winnable for Trump. He was never, his style of campaigning, his personality, his issue stances, that might do you good in Roanoke, that might do you good down in coal country. But he was never going to be the kind of guy who was going to even keep it remotely competitive in the Northern Virginia suburbs. And there are a million people who live in Fairfax County. You just cannot concede territories that big and hope to win statewide. And for you to say, it's a very Democratic state, it's worth noting that people are already doing polling on the gubernatorial race next year. We elect our governor in 2017. Ed Gillespie, who came close in that Senate race in 2014, is already the front runner in the primary and the front runner in the general. So this is not an impossible state for Republicans to win. It is a state where a Republican has very little margin for error. And the last guy who did that was Bob McDonnell.
Bob McDonnell. Follow the Bob McDonnell example and you'll only find political success.
To a point.
Oh, man. Yeah, I recall Trump, he barely won the Virginia primary back on Super Tuesday and did very poorly in the Northern Virginia suburbs. I think Rubio handled him fairly effectively in the Northern Virginia suburbs, but Trump ran up huge numbers pretty much everywhere else, and that's why he was able to win by about 2 or 3 points. So people who are working for Trump in Virginia are looking for work, so that means there's potentially some good hires out there, and if you need to post a job, you need to go to ZipRecruiter.com. Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting your job in just one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top sites, and now you can.
With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to more than 100 job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No more juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast.
Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 1 million businesses. And right now, listeners of the 3 Martini Lunch can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. And one more time now, to go try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. So, Jim, we spent a lot of this podcast talking about all the problems Donald Trump has, and there are certainly others that we didn't get to. But Hillary Clinton's got her own set of problems due to the WikiLeaks revelations. They might not cost her the election, but she's definitely in damage control mode when it comes to a lot of these things. We talked about a few of them yesterday with the pay-to-play between the State Department and the Clinton Foundation being seen in an ever clearer sight. There's the collusion between the campaign and the media. Yesterday, there was the John Podesta and Jennifer Palmieri emails basically slamming Catholics as joining the church only out of political expedience, referring to the Catholic Church as a Middle Ages dictatorship, and John Podesta talking about creating AstroTurf front liberal Catholic groups to try and undermine the power of the Catholic Church on political matters. So clearly it's not been a good week in that way for the Clinton campaign. But at least they've got their story straight. It doesn't seem to have a lot of grounding in fact at this point, at least as far as it's been revealed by the campaign or the U.S. government. But they know who to blame for this and why we shouldn't believe any of it. Three clips here. First, Hillary from the first debate. Then a Fox News report following the first WikiLeaks revelations. And then the now embattled Donna Brazile earlier this week with George Stephanopoulos.
There's no doubt now that Russia has used cyber attacks against all kinds of organizations in our country, and I am deeply concerned about this.
They are quoting members of the intelligence community who say that it is possible that whoever hacked into the emails could have altered some of them to make them more damaging, calling it a sophisticated Russian disinformation campaign. It should concern every American that Russia is willing to engage in such hostile acts in order to help Donald Trump become president of the United States.
I refuse to open them up. And I've asked the staff at the DNC and all our Democratic allies, don't open up that crap, because it's postmarked from Russia.
Don't look at it. You can't believe any of it. It's all Russia's fault, Jim.
Marion, shut your eyes. Always room for a Raiders of the Lost Ark quote. You know, Greg, one of the excuses that I'm particularly finding enjoyable here or amusing here is that, look, we don't even know if these are true. Okay. From everything we've seen so far, they certainly seem to have the little details right. When, you know, John Podesta tells his daughter where he left his watch on the table and stuff, like lots of little details like this, that if this is a hoax, man, this is an epic hoax. secondly, when Jennifer Palmieri says, like, I can't even confirm or deny I got that email. Uh-huh. You can. You look at your emails, and if you got the email, then you confirm it. If you didn't get it, you can deny it. The fact that you're not willing to confirm it or deny it pretty much counts as confirming it, okay? If it was a lie, you'd be telling us. There's not, you know, not too much debate about that. And finally, Greg, let's face it. Have we come across anything in any of these emails that makes us say, oh, that doesn't sound like John Podesta? That doesn't sound like the sort of thing he would write or say? No, in fact, it all sounds exactly like what we would say. Down to these minute little details and things like that. Everything's been, you know, everyone is kind of smug and condescending and snide and disrespectful to everybody. This matches up with what he's saying publicly. It's not like we're seeing anybody, like there's a secret email saying, you know, I really think Trump is awesome. And we really should, you know, it's a good, you know, I have no idea how we're going to beat this guy or anything like that. It's all in there sounding pretty plausible. So yet, could the Russians or somebody have inserted a fake email in there? Conceivably. I'm not sure that they really would need to, considering the damage being done by the real emails. And while I feel a certain sympathy to Podesta and these other folks, it's never fun to be hacked. It must be embarrassing to have all your emails printed out to the whole wide world. Nothing in them has kind of indicated that this is a giant hoax or some sort of fake effort or something. They got hacked. It's not nice and it's not fair that the Russians did this, but we sure as heck are learning a lot, and it pretty much confirms most people's worst suspicions of Hillary Clinton and her allies and the Clinton camp and Center for American Progress and Podesta and all that stuff. And, you know, it's basically we don't even know if it's true is probably the least plausible excuse or defense they can play in the situation.
Oh, man. Well, it's been a dreary day here in the Three Martini Lunch, so let's end with a little bit of fun, although it is absurd. Jim, we've known the Nobel Peace Prize has been kind of a sham in recent years when folks like Al Gore and Barack Obama, for not really doing anything, won the Nobel Peace Prize, Jimmy Carter and some others. It's basically turned into a liberal Politician of the Year award. But the others seem to be fairly grounded in actual accomplishment. The Nobel Peace Prize in Literature for 2016 has been awarded to Bob Dylan for, quote, having created new poetic expressions within the great American song tradition. And one of the quotes from the folks over at Nobel is, if you look back far back 2,500 years or so, you discover Homer and Sappho, and they wrote poetic texts that were meant to be listened to, that were meant to be performed, often with instruments. And it's the same way with Bob Dylan. So think about Homer and now this.
many roads must a man walk down before you call him a man?
So that's where we are in 2016, Jim.
So I must be the only person in the world who is neither thrilled nor outraged that Bob Dylan won the Nobel Prize for Literature. My entire Twitter feed was on fire this morning about this. I guess it's a blind spot in my historical knowledge. I chuckle a bit at the poor New Republic writer who actually wrote a lengthy piece on the odds makers for the Nobel Prize for Literature. Apparently this is a big deal in some betting markets. Some people are really into this idea of who's going to win and all that kind of stuff. And they really got fired up about it. And among his conclusions was, no, Bob Dylan is not going to win the Nobel Literature Prize. Get over it. Stop talking about proposing. And he had it. So I feel bad for this guy having made that adamant prediction that it could never happen. If you see something really surprising like this, like Dylan walking away, going to Oslo, wherever it is, and collecting the Nobel Prize, I can only come to one conclusion. You know what that is, Greg?
What's that?
The times, they are changing.
They are changing. I've got two.
A lot of build up to one punchline. Nonetheless,
two thoughts here. First of all, clearly heavy lifting got the shaft on this.
Well, it's not fiction, right? So it's not really literature, I guess.
Well, then the Weed Agency could have won half of
it would have come off the nonfiction bestseller list. So.
Exactly. And if Bob Dylan wins, I think this guy got shafted for the Peace Prize last year.
Winter, spring, summer, or fall.
James Taylor singing to the French just days after the American officials failed to show up for the unity rally following the Charlie Hebdo attack. So, James Taylor, somewhere there's a Nobel Peace Prize that should have your name on it, by these standards anyway.
Huh, Greg, you thought Taylor got robbed. How about the man who invited him, huh? Nobody ever remembers him. Poor John Kerry. Yeah, there you go.
Oh, John Kerry. Wow. Jim, on that note, talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And thanks to ZipRecruiter.com for sponsoring the podcast today. Remember, listeners, you can go to ZipRecruiter for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial and post your jobs there at no cost. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. Thanks for being with us. Join us Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.